case on the docket this morning is 2-24-0574, the people of the state of Illinois, plaintiff, M. Craig Valderrama, defendant, Appellee, Zacharias Sexual Abuse Center, non-party subpoena, deponent, appellant. Arguing on behalf of the appellant, Mr. David R. Delray. Arguing on behalf of the appellee, Mr. Jason S. Reyes.
All right, counsel, you may proceed when ready. Please feel free to adjust the microphone.
Thank you. Good morning, counsel. May it please the court. Your Honors, I am David Del Rey. I represent the Zacharias Center, non-party subpoenaed deponent. In this case, I don't represent AV, the victim, but I would be remiss if I did not lay a little bit of background. She was victimized and traumatized by her father, who, by the way, I think is also important to note in the records, that when he was confronted by the police, said, "I did whatever she said I did." Thereafter, after her disclosure, she's then victimized by her own family, by her mother and her paternal grandmother, who go on this pattern of trying to convince her to recant and write statements that are contrary to her initial disclosure. And then the trial court. And in my opinion, the trial court was on its way to also violating her rights and betraying the trust that she has, not only in the statute, but is under the Constitution that protects victim rights.
Mr. Del Rey, is it clear from the record that your client knew about the various pressures that were being placed on her from everywhere?
No, I don't think that's in the record at all. In fact, no one knows what she has talked about with Zacharias Center. That's why we're here this morning. Those records weren't disclosed to any state's attorney, as there was kind of an inference, I think, in the response brief that might have been tendered to ASA's Romano. You'll see from the record that there was an affidavit from Sandy Williams, the Zacharias executive director. Those records have not been disclosed to anyone, including myself, because they are privileged under the statute. Under a statute that I submit to you is one of the most unambiguous statutes in the Code of Civil Procedure. That statute, which you know has been amended to take away the qualified privilege, it is now unqualified and absolute. And, you know, in Foggy, that's what the Supreme Court said, and that really wasn't a stretch because the statute is crystal clear, in my opinion. And in fact, violating that statute is a misdemeanor, as counsel has indicated in his response. When I look at the record and I look at what defense counsel served, it was a very general subpoena, not specific at all. In fact, the subpoena which I have with me says to the Zacharias Center, "You're commanded to bring the following: any records or notes for AV containing statements or summary of statements made by AV regarding allegations of sexual abuse committed against her by the court for an in-camera inspection pursuant to the attached court order." There is no exception. Even if you had a specific, you had knowledge of what was the content, you'd be guessing. And that's unfortunately what Judge Leavitt did, in my opinion. Judge Leavitt said, after the defendant speculation, then he speculates, the trial court does, and says, "There is good reason to believe there is impeaching material in the records." I don't even know what that's based on, given the record. What we have is, unlike Miller, Justice Hutchinson, which you concurred with Justice Burkett, who wrote that in 2022, we have so many statements that they could use, as opposed to these confidential privileged statements, because of how this case played out for poor AV. We've got her initial disclosure in writing. We've got then a recantation that her mother typed and brought to the police department. We've got multiple victim-sensitive interviews in writing, on video, all kinds of impeachment material that the defense has been provided that they can use. But none of that leads to any sort of exception to get to the privileged confidential records that are absolute and unqualified. And I would say this with respect to Miller. Counsel says in their response, "Well, I think Miller left the door open." And I've read Miller a lot, and I don't see anywhere where Your Honor concurred with Justice Burkett that that privilege was anything other than absolute and unqualified. And I just want to read from that. And I know it's a Rule 23. I understand that, but I think it's persuasive. Your Honor wrote, first, we note that in Foggy, our Supreme Court never expressly provided that the absolute privilege codified in Section 802.1, which had since been amended to remove any language concerning in-camera inspections, should yield to a defendant who makes a specific showing that rape counseling records contain exculpatory evidence. We don't have that here. Not only do we not have that, but you're saying here, even if we did, it's not in Foggy. And this court goes on to say, instead, our Supreme Court found that there, where the defendant made no specific showing as to a need to obtain absolutely privileged materials, there was no need to advocate the victim's privilege over her counseling records. And finally, you say, nonetheless, even if the Foggy Court did carve out such an exception, which I don't think it did, and I don't think you said that in here anywhere, to the absolute privilege codified in 802.1, like the Foggy defendant here failed to articulate any specific need to obtain GM's counseling records. And I think that is exactly what we have here. We have a fishing expedition that is not allowed under 802.
I'd have to quarrel a little bit with you saying Foggy didn't made such a broad rule. Because it's clear, I think, at least I guess it's clear when you make up your mind, it's clear. They say, well, there's nothing here. It was just this general and the request that it, I should have that in front of me, but there was no showing that the counseling communications would provide a source of impeachment. And so therefore, the privilege did not need, under those circumstances, to be breached. And I give it, you're absolutely right. It is an absolute privilege. And they clearly wanted to enshrine, maybe, the rape counseling above any other mental health counseling. Because that has been, that has yielded to at least in camera. I get that, but I wonder if the fact that Judge Leavitt said something like these are likely to contain impeaching material in the sense that the record seems to reflect, and if I have this wrong, tell me, that she made statement one, statement two, statement three, then began counseling. And that's all we know, I think. And then added some allegations, statement four. And
right.
So I can't say I find that conclusion that they might contain impeaching material to be wild and unexplained.
That's fair.
Is it enough?
No.
That's a different question,
yeah.
I think.
Right.
Is it unavailable from any other source? Is it critical, like it was in Davis? Is it cumulative? I think those are good questions, but that's how I'm approaching it.
No, and I appreciate that. And Justice Mullen, I've struggled with that question because in Foggy, wouldn't it have been nice if the Supreme Court maybe gave us some examples, like when can this, and they didn't, obviously, for their own reasoning. So I try to think, what could possibly be the exception? You would have to know what's in those privileged records, and nobody does other than AV. Now, if AV was to disclose those to some third party and break the privilege, that's different. There's no evidence in the record. What we do have, we had a grandmother who said, hey, defense counsel, she's still talking. She's talking to the Zachariah Center. You should get those records. So that's all we have is this busybody grandmother trying to protect her son at the expense of her granddaughter. And that's how this happened. That's all we have. Now, we do have these contradictory statements, yes. And unfortunately, AV is going to be subject to cross-examination on those. And how did that all play out? It's very unfortunate that there were four VSIs, but there are. But that still, in my humble opinion, doesn't breach the absolute privilege. And I agree with you. We've got cumulative and all kinds of other admissible documents that they could use to impeach her, not only to call her, but to call the grandmother. What did she say to you? We probably can figure out what grandma's going to testify, same as the mother. She'll probably say she recanted. Okay, then why do you need the records? That is the final stop of AV's betrayal. Someone who is going to believe her, listen to her, be non-judgmental, and never disclose, ever, what was said. That's the point of the statute, is to help people like AV who are victims of rape, familial rape. And so, again, I understand why we're here. I get it, and I get where Judge Leavitt was coming from. But when I look at the case law, the statute, and the Constitution, which, by the way, also talks about AV's right to privacy, I just don't think we're even close to any. We're not even on the track to get to the hurdle, in my opinion. And if there's nothing else.
Do you have any additional questions?
No, I don't.
All right, thank you, counsel. You will have time in rebuttal.
Thank you.
Counsel, please step forward and proceed when ready. And again, if you need to adjust the microphone, please do.
May it please the court, counsel. I'm Jason Dreyfus. I represent McCreed Valderrama. The trial court here correctly applied the law when it ordered the Zacharias Center to disclose AV's records for in-camera inspection. And I'd like to direct this court's attention to the record at pages 82 to 83 when the court said the following, quote, "It's unconscionable to think that a defendant such as Mr. Valderrama could be convicted were information that could be viewed as exculpatory, non-cumulative, and not inadmissible, and certainly not available by other means were to be hidden from him," end quote. That is what the trial court was focused on. And so the Zacharias Center is focused on, there's so much evidence, there's so many other sources, there's so much discovery that was given to Mr. Valderrama. That is actually irrelevant to the issue, because what the trial court was focused on is this small slice of information that the trial court said at record pages 89 to 90, quote, "The defense offered a reason to believe that counseling records would provide a source of impeaching material that are unavailable from other sources," end quote. The small slice of information that provides or likely provides that impeaching information are the records from the Zacharias Center. VSI number one occurred. AV implicated her father. VSI number two occurred. She recanted that statement. VSI number three occurred. She recanted her recantation. Then her mother contacts the police and says, listen, my daughter has been receiving counseling at the Zacharias Center. She's made some additional allegations concerning her father during that counseling. You should re-interview her. Then VSI number four occurs. Based on VSI number four, additional charges are filed against Mr. Valderrama. And so it's that counseling that occurs between VSI number three and VSI number four that the court believed would include material useful to the defense. And it's that quote, that language, material useful to the defense, that comes exactly from Foggy.
Well, counsel, if that's what your client's trial counsel actually wanted, why was that not identified in the subpoena? The subpoenas are like everything from the time she walked in the door until the time they went to trial. Why wasn't it specific?
Well, it's as specific as it can be.
No, you just made it very specific, that that's what they're looking for. She's still talking, and that's the new charges, and then this fourth event. Why wasn't it identified that way? It would have made a big difference based upon statute, I believe, had it been specific as opposed to, well, let's give us everything and see what shakes out.
So it is limited to, so I hear what you're saying. If I understand the justice correctly, you're saying that it should be limited to just the new allegations?
Well, if that's what Grandma is saying to defense attorney, look, she's still talking. This is what's happening. We know what she said in 1, 2, and 3. Let's go to number 4. You don't, I mean, not you personally, but the subpoena doesn't say that.
Right.
And it could have, other than just let's throw in the hook and see what comes out, because that's what that subpoena sounds like to me.
Yes and no. I would concede it could be more narrow. So I will concede, yes, it could certainly have been more narrowly tailored. At the same time, the Zachariah Center and Amicus also say that there's a whole lot of other information that is discussed during these counseling centers other than the sexual assault or alleged sexual assault between A.V. and her father. So in that sense, I would argue that it is narrow because there could be have been other sexual assaults. There's referrals that the Zachariah Center probably make. There might be medication. There might be other sort of treatments that they make. So we're not asking for that. All of those other things are outside of the scope. So it's just limited to the sexual assault between A.V. and her father. So in that sense, I would argue it's narrow. Could it be narrower? Yes.
But may I ask, I guess I'm a little concerned about a rule, and the Supreme Court wasn't foggy. They said, well, we're not going to allow even an in-camera, which is going to be available in every case, because that would defeat the privilege everywhere. So, I mean, you've said, well, Judge, I didn't see that as a holding, but he did say, I don't think the rule is that you couldn't get, I saw that, maybe I interpreted it a little differently than you, you couldn't get exculpatory material or impeaching material. But you could argue that in every case. There could be exculpatory material in the rape counseling of every victim.
So that is a fair concern?
Here, unlike Foggy, we have what I see, and I'm trying to look at it kind of scientifically. I don't know that there's a statement in there that, well, because of the counseling, then she added allegations. I don't see it that clear, so if you do, that'd be interesting, but hold that for a moment. What I definitely saw is that in between 3 and 4, there was counseling and there were additional allegations. I also see in the record that I think it, in statement 4, the victim said, I feel safe now. The defendant is in jail, and I feel something to that effect. So could there be the conclusion that because of the counseling, I disclosed more? I think that's arguable. But is that the rule then? Every time there's a recantation then, and it coincides with counseling then, there will be an in-camera allowed under a statute that has an absolute privilege. I would take issue with you, and I don't mean to hold the floor, especially while your minutes are counting away, but, you know, the idea of, well, it might be something exculpatory in there, you know, Maybe, but then it'd be in every case, and then we wouldn't have a privilege, would we?
So I think to focus on, I guess my stronger position, would be to focus on the potential impeaching nature of the materials. And I think from the trial court's perspective, when mom goes to the police and says, my daughter is now in counseling, she's revealing new allegations, and then there's a subsequent VSI, the court's thinking, huh, now instead of four statements that the defense has access to, there's actually a fifth statement out there that could provide, reasonably provide, impeaching information. Me as the trial court would like to conduct an in-camera evaluation of that information to determine, is there impeaching information? Mr. Valderrama might never get access to that. Trial court might say, you know what, this is wholly consistent with VSI number four, and Mr. Valderrama might never see those Zacharias Center things. But I guess...
Can I interject? Wouldn't VSI four be inconsistent with VSI three and VSI one?
Would it be inconsistent?
Yes.
I mean, but I guess
because
by...
there were additional allegations.
By omission only. I mean, if the only difference is the addition of items, right? So if the inconsistency is just additive, then that would be the inconsistency. But I think what the trial court's focused on is what's the discrepancy or potential discrepancy between what was said during counseling prior to VSI number four. And so I think with respect to what the Foggy Court was concerned with in terms of addressing the justice's concern is they specifically said twice the defendant's suggested procedure was not constantly required in this case. We do not believe that the procedure was required to be breached in this case. And so I guess the court's fear that this is going to open the floodgates to everybody's going to go on a fishing expedition for exculpatory information. I think that Mr. Valderrama here, based on the facts in this case, based on the series of events with VSI number 1, 2, 3, and then counseling, and then VSI number 4, I think in this case, I think had adequately persuaded the trial court that there was a reasonable likelihood that there was impeaching information that is totally unavailable from any other source. And so I think that the court was correct.
May I question you a little bit? I don't mean to hog up your time, but in what way is it unavailable in that allegedly she made the same statement in VSI 4?
Well, we don't know that.
You could impeach her, their statements to the friend, I think, the mother, I may have that wrong, the grandmother, I may have that wrong, but there were other statements. So in what way is it unavailable? What's unavailable is that, according to your supposition, she may have said in counseling other things happened. And so, yes, the statements, the fact that it was made in counseling would be unavailable, but the fact that it was made is available and it's cumulative, really.
I wonder
if it's cumulative.
That would not be the only way to be impeaching. There could be factual inconsistencies between how she described the new acts during counseling and then how she described in VSI number four.
You say that in every case? The victim, in relating what they related to the police and the counselor, may have said it differently.
I guess you could, but this is a pretty unique factual scenario where there's four VSIs and there's interstitial counseling, and so I don't think it's going to open the floodgates to every single child sex case in a way that's going to gum up the works. So I think in this case, it would be appropriate. So I would offer that as another way of impeachment.
Counsel, is there any limitation on cross-examination? So obviously there are inconsistent statements here, and there's the timing argument. Is there anything that precludes questioning on cross-examination concerning that without having the actual information from Zacharias?
Like, could the defense cross-examine her about the counseling?
About the fact of a statement post-counseling that differs from statements pre-counseling.
No, I think that that would be ripe for counseling. I think probably they would be instructed if the court upheld or reversed and precluded these records from being released, then the privilege would be upheld, and anything that sort of treaded too closely to the privilege they could get into. But inconsistent statements made at different times, I think, would be ripe for cross-examination.
I wanted you to address, you had other arguments concerning the absolute nature of the privilege, concerning mandatory reporters.
Yes.
I just wanted to make sure you had time to review that.
So the Zacharias Center spends a lot of time, pages and pages of time in their brief, talking about the privilege being absolute, which means that it has absolutely no restriction, exception, or qualification, and that's just flatly wrong based on the plain language of the statute. We know if there's imminent harm of physical risk to somebody, the privilege can be breached. And the second example is if there's in a minor sex case, which this one is, if a minor discloses to a mandatory reporter, that, like the Zacharias Center employs, a psychologist or a social worker, they have an obligation to breach the privilege, and the mandatory reporter statute specifically addresses that. They say, notwithstanding any privilege, you are obligated to report. And so those are two examples where, and I use the word permeable, call it the privilege de facto qualified, whatever the court likes. Frankly, the Zacharias Center was left stammering with an explanation for how their privilege is still absolute. It's just not. Those are two examples where it's no longer absolute, because the counselor is going to walk out of that room and they're going to call the police or they're going to call DCFS. So all of a sudden, this absolute privilege isn't so absolute anymore. And so I guess I'm offering to this court situations in where the Zacharias Center wants to tell you that this is absolute, it's absolute, it can never be breached, no way, no how, you could never, ever, ever, ever betray this young girl. And I'm offering two examples where, yes, actually you can.
But isn't, oh, I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
Well, but isn't the, during the counseling at some point, probably in the beginning of each session, there is some explanation of this issue. If something else comes up, we are required to tell the police. But we won't say anything else to mom, to dad, to grandma. I mean, as we interview kids, we say that. We say this conversation's between us. It's not to be imparted to mom or to dad. And so although I didn't read any of them, I'm sure there are disclaimers that even a 14-year-old would understand.
I don't know the answer to that question. It's not in the record. I don't know. If the court doesn't have any other questions,
no.
I'll sit down. Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
All right. Counsel, you may proceed with rebuttal.
Thank you. Justice Kennedy, the answer to your question is absolutely yes. AV is going to be subject to a question just like this. Young lady, isn't it true that you gave more detailed statements with more and brand new allegations you had never made before after you started counseling at the Zacharias Center? Yes. A defense attorney can ask that question in good faith without having the records. So the answer to your question is yes. They don't need the records. She's going to be subject to that, unfortunately. Justice Mullen, you talked about AV saying she disclosed in the fourth VSI because she felt a sense of safety and security because her father was in prison. I agree with that. She said that, and that's in the record. And I would submit she also likely said that because when she was in counseling, she was also in a safe place, in a safe setting,
where she felt comfortable in giving more horrific details, by the way, of what actually occurred going all the way back to fourth grade. That's the point of the counseling. That's the point of the therapy. And isn't that the basis that we keep them privileged so she can heal and become healthy and become a healthy adult? And I would submit the answer to that is yes, and that's why the privilege is absolute. Now, look, counsel talks about whether it was, it's permeable. Well, listen, it might have been when it was qualified. It certainly isn't now. And yes, DCF, they're mandated reporters. I wholeheartedly agree with that. But in this case, look at the procedure of it. At this point, it's already been investigated. The father's been charged. He's been indicted. She's given statements. There's no point to breach any sort of confidentiality based on the statute at this point in time. If nobody had ever been charged and she just goes to Zacharias Center and makes all these disclosures, that's different. That's a totally different set of facts, not like this at all. When we look at, and Justice Mullen, you asked the question, and I thought about that one as well quite a bit, with the timing between the third and the fourth and the counseling starting in between, and ASA Zarmeno said something to the effect of, there's nothing in the Zacharias records that led to additional charges. Now, counsel took that as, oh, he must have seen him. No, his point, I think he was saying, is that was solely based on VSI 4. We watched VSI 4. It was more detailed. And based on that, I think there was two more indictments. They were never disclosed to anyone. I said this originally, and I think that's accurate. In fact, I know it's accurate. I just wanted to take one moment to thank my amicus. I think that the state pointed out more artfully than I did AV's constitutional rights to privacy, which I think read in conjunction with 802.1 makes it impermeable. That is the privilege. And it keeps it as a shield for AV. And it comports with the purpose of the act, which I'm not going to read to you. You know the purpose. It sets forth, but it provides a safe place, a safe listener, a professional who can help without the slightest chance of any sort of betrayal like AV has had throughout this case. Your Honors, I ask that you quash that subpoena. I ask that you reverse the trial court's order for an in-camera inspection that is way beyond anything contained in the current version of the statute. And I ask that you reverse the civil contempt order issued against my client, Zacharias Center, and vacate any fines that may have accrued.
All right, thank you very much, Counsel.
Thank you, Your Honors.
We will take this matter under advisement and issue a disposition in due course.